Very good morning to you. Very good morning to you, Namibia, the land of the brave. And very good morning to you, Tate France, as well. So good morning, Namibia. Good morning, my dear listeners. Welcome to Eagle FM. And this is your 24/7, your number one talk radio station in the land. Could be on the continent as well. So welcome. Thanks for choosing Eagle FM. And it's always a pleasure for us to be in your company. We do this with faces full of smile, you know. It's really, really a pleasure having you in our company. And also for choosing Eagle FM, especially at this time, for actually tuning in Unpacking the Day. My name is Mike Oshoveli. And as I told you, this week I'm on Mars, on planet Mars. And thank you, Tate France, for connecting, you know, connecting me, you know, connecting, you know, bringing, actually crossing over that mic, you know, to planet Mars. So this is Big Mike on the mic at this point in time. And this is Unpacking the Day, your daily dose of what is really going on in terms of business, economics, and politic headlines. So every weekday, we cut through the noise to make sense of the big stories, trends, and numbers, you know, making headlines. So we keep it clear, a little witty sometimes, you know, and always curious, asking the questions that matter and giving you a fresh take on what people are saying out there. So the views shared during our segments don't necessarily reflect those of Eagle FM. So we are here to unpack what others are saying, spark a meaningful conversation so that you can be part of the bigger conversation. So this is your platform. This is your space to unpack the headlines and get to the heart of the stories. So if you're just joining us, our time is 3 minutes past the hour of 8. So you're welcome. Thanks for joining us. So our first segment on this program, we go into the time machine and go back into time. And let me welcome, you know, everyone on the continent. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, wherever you are tuning in from across this beautiful, beautiful continent we call our motherland, we call Africa. So welcome to on this day in Africa. So today, well, we've got some fascinating moment from Africa past, from Africa's past, what to share with you. Now, and in 1915, let's go to 1915, that day, this is the day when the German Southwest Africa said, we surrender. We surrender. So picture this. It is World War One, and after a long fight, the German forces in what we now, you know, called the land of the brave, Namibia, finally waved the white flag. They waved the white flag. They formally give up to South Africa troop at the place called Korab. Now, why this is significant? Well, it is the end of the German colonial rule in this part of Africa. So South Africa step in. So South Africa actually step in to run the show under the permission from the League of Nations. But here's the thing. Now, this kicks off a very, very, very long road to independence for Namibia, which doesn't happen until 1990. That is how many years? That is 75 years. That's 75 years later. So, all right. So let's go way back in 1737, a man named George Smith arrives at the Cape of Good Hope on July the 9th. And he is a Moravian missionary, basically someone sent to spread his faith, you know. And why this is significant? Because Smith goes on to start the first Protestant mission working with the Khoikhoi people. and he has paved the way for all the Protestant missionary work that follows in Southern Africa. So one person, one boat ride, and definitely a big impact. So let's fast forward to more recent times in Addis Ababa. In Addis Ababa, that's Ethiopia's capital, something big happened. Something big happened. The African Union officially launches. Now, it's replacing the old Organization of African Unity, kind of an upgrade, okay? This was like kind of an upgrade, you might say. So the AU job, what was now the AU job? Why this was upgraded? It's actually to bring African countries closer together politically and economically, and keep the peace and also help the continent to grow. And who was the first person in charge? South African old Thabo Mbeki takes the helm as the AU first chairperson. All right, so now here is a happy one. After years of brutal civil war, the people of Sudan vote in a referendum. That's where now everyone get to say, you know, get a say, and they choose independence. Now, that's in 2011. So on this day, on the 9th, South Sudan officially becomes its own country, breaking away from Sudan. So, and, you know, get this. It's now on 2011, it actually became the Africa's 54th recognized nation. You know, and then it was a brand new country on the map. All right. So, yeah, from when you look at what we look today, from surrender and missionaries to new unions and new nations. So Africa history is never boring, actually. Africa history is never boring. Okay. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in to On This Africa, On This Day in Africa. Well, until tomorrow. All right. Good morning. Good morning, Namibia. Welcome. If you're just joining us, our time is about 8 minutes past the hour of eight. And we will be going up to 11 o'clock. So we have plenty of time for you also to, you know, later on to come in and engage as well. So today's Thursday, July the 9th. What is the thought for the day today? What is our thought for the day? There's an old proverb that says, when the hyena drinks, the dog can only watch. Okay? When the hyena drinks, the dog can only look on. So the proverbs actually remind us that those with great power, with great influence or authority, often get the first opportunity while others can only watch. Now, but here's the question for us this morning. Are we spending our lives watching others drink from the rivers of opportunity? Or are we preparing ourselves for the day when it is our own turn? That's the question this morning. Now, life isn't always fair. Life is not always fair. Some people start with more money, more connections, more influence. That's a reality. That's a reality. But today's spectator, remember this, that today's spectator can become tomorrow's leader through hard work, you know, patience, and preparation. You need to prepare yourself through hard work. Now, so instead of being bitter because someone else is drinking today, use that time to sharpen your skill, build your character, and stay ready. Okay? Every season changes. Rivers keep flowing. All right? So, my dear listeners, don't waste your energy watching the hyena. Eh? Don't waste your energy watching the hyena. Focus on becoming stronger enough that when your moment comes, no one will stop you from taking your own drink. That's our thought for today. Good morning. And welcome. Welcome to Eagle FM. And our time 11 minutes. We're going slowly by slowly. All right. So welcome, welcome. And it's good to have you in our company. And it's always a pleasure for us to have you. So what is on the menu? What have I seen? What have I seen when I'm on the planet here, when I'm planet Mars? What have I seen? What is going on? Few things. Yesterday, front page we didn't talk about that. Front page of the Villager. It was about the traditional leaders and residents of the Kavango East and Kavango West firmly rejecting the proposed 7 billion Kavango-Link pipeline. The pipeline that would transfer water from the Kavango River to Windhoek. So the residents and the traditional leader insisting that the region's own water needs to be fully met before water is exported. So they say, nah, we have a problem of water here. First, you know, we need actually our own water needs addressed before we even entertain the thought of exporting water to Windhoek. So now, and the other thing is also, there must be also a red line in terms of water. We can't just have a red line in terms of meat and other. No, there must be also a red line. There must be also a red line that the water also cannot go through, just like the meat. Just like the meat. So, yeah. All right, we're going to get into that. We're going to discuss that because it looks like there are some people in the boxing ring, you know. We have to see who is giving more punches. All right, we're going to unpack that. Yeah, the other thing very interesting to look at as well is the recently the government there's a government recent frozen the sport funding. Okay. So and that has threatened to really derail Namibia's high performance athletic ambitions, you know, because it's a disrupting critical support system of athletes. So that's something that we also gotta look at. So we keep saying, you know, sport is a priority, but we are not at the same time. On one side, we said sport is a priority, and on the others, we are not actually taking out money to support that. Okay, our mouth is not where our hands are, or where our pockets are, or something like that. All right. So yeah, yesterday we were supposed to talk. There are issues that came out of Parliament that I wanted us to look at because it's always to know what our the lawmakers are discussing. So hopefully this morning we will get a time to look at that as well. So we're going to unpack some of those issues as well. So, and you know, your participation is also part of the show. Make sure that you are unpacking this with me and you come through and you come through as well. So, all right. So 14 minutes past the hour of 8. That's our time. All right. So, okay, let's get into it. Let's get into it. So the headline that on the front page yesterday's The Villager is Kavango leaders reject water pipeline plan to Windhoek. And this is a fascinating story by Anakleta Haikera, our staff, our journalist in Rundu. Now, when you analyze this story, a little bit more deeper, this is a story, let's say thirsty. So, it's about thirsty, but it's also about power. So, when you think about it, it's also about power. And it's also about who get hurt. Who in this country? Who, when people speak, who get hurt? You know, who can be hurt? I'm not hurting somebody, but hurt in this country. That's another question. And also about whether we are building a future that works for everyone or only for the people in the capital. Sometimes it's kind of like we in the regions, you know, we are actually serving Windhoek. Eh? We are here to serve Windhoek. So, and we're going to look at that. Yeah, join me in unpacking this. All right. Now, here's what happened. Let me give you the story, but you must also subscribe to the Villager so that you can read this for yourself. So that you understand, you read the story so that you get a bigger picture of what is the story all about. But let me just put you in the framework. So what happened is that NamWater, our national water utility, has a plan called the Kavango Link, right? It's a pipeline that will cost roughly $7 billion. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of money, my friends. Okay. So, and then it will take water from the Kavango River near Rundu, pump it through a 280 kilometer pipe to Grootfontein, and then feed into the existing water system that end up in Windhoek and the central area. So that is the idea. So NamWater say this is necessary. Okay, remember this. NamWater now is saying, well, this is necessary because they say the central part of Namibia, where Windhoek, our capital, is located, has been running out of water since 2013. They've been running out of water since 2013, and they say the dams are low, the underground water is running dry, and the population is growing. So those are some of the issues that the reasons why they're coming up with this idea. And they say if Windhoek, this is now the point to say, if Windhoek goes thirsty, if Windhoek goes thirsty, the whole country will suffer. These people are threatening us. If Windhoek goes thirsty, the whole country will suffer, because that's where the government, universities, big businesses, and most jobs are concentrated. So they're saying, look, if we go thirst in Windhoek and the big offices get closed because of water, everyone will suffer. Everyone will suffer. So now, well, I mean, being honest, on the paper, that sounds reasonable. I think that sounds reasonable, to be honest. We all need water, and we all want Windhoek to keep functioning. We all want Windhoek to keep on functioning. Definitely, it's not a threat. I think they are not threatening, but we all want Windhoek to keep functioning. But here's the problem. Here's now the problem. The people of Kavango and Kavango West, the people of Kavango East and Kavango West, the very community living next to that river, they are saying, okay. Hold on a little bit. Don't run too fast, man. Just hold on a little bit. So they are saying, we still don't have reliable water. Now I said, no, you want to take water here, and we ourselves don't have reliable water. We still have villages where people drink unsafe water. We still have dry taps. Our taps, there's no water. And now you want to take our river? So you want to take our river, the same river that feed our crops, the same river feed our fish, our culture, our children, and send it to the capital? Aikona. Kasikara ngoso. They say, 가질까란 것은. 응? It's not gonna happen. So now there's that tension, okay? There's that tension, and that's why I said there's this boxing ring, and they get now in the boxing ring, and we need to see who actually gonna knock out who. Hmm? And well, I'm not gonna tell you who gonna knock out who. There are some that have really, now and you know who has the muscles, eh? The one who gonna have to got some muscles, bigger muscles, gonna end up winning anyway. So yeah, there is tension, and that's where we need now to start asking, you know, questions. Maybe start unpacking more and more. All right. So now, okay. Let's also be fair here. Okay. So I'm kind of just focusing on the let's be fair a little bit here. So let's just look at Windhoek's first, because we cannot really, honestly, to be honest, we cannot dismiss it. Okay? We cannot dismiss it. We have to look at more realistically. Okay? So I may have exaggerated that in terms of, you know, being comic a bit. But Namibia, as we know, some would argue that. So is the driest country in Southern Africa. All right? So Windhoek, our capital, sit in a place where, you know, rainfall is unreliable, drought are getting worse. So right now, NamWater can only supply about 30% of what Windhoek actually needs, 30%. So the rest is made up through the reusing treated water, pumping from underground and managing demand, you know. So, but the city has a water deficit of roughly 30% under normal conditions. So when drought hits, like last year, like the terrible one we just experienced in 2023 and also in 2024, so the situation becomes critical. And the Windhoek people knows this. It becomes really critical. The government even declared a national state of emergency over water scarcity. So NamWater's argument is this. Okay? So before we take our asset guys and Nomikonda and knife and gun and, you know. Yeah, so this is what their argument is. If Windhoek collapse, if Windhoek collapses because there is no water, so if Windhoek collapse because there is no water, the economy collapse. Government offices shut, university closed, business leave, you know, business they're going to leave because there's no water in Windhoek, jobs disappear. So once the business leaves as well. So, and now this is the main thing, and the knock-on effect reaches every corner of Namibia, now including the Kazangwe as well. So the knock-on effect will reach every corner of this country, including, you know, the Kavangos. So, well, looking at that, it's not a small argument, okay? In honest, it's not a small argument. That's also real. So, but, well, you know that there's always a but on this on the show. So, now the question is, think about this. Does solving Windhoek's thirsty, you know, mean we have the right to create thirst somewhere else? So, does it mean we have right to create thirst somewhere else? That's the question. That's the question. And we're going to look at that now. Let's get into nitty-gritty. Now, let's turn to the mirror around. Let's turn the mirror around. Kavango East and Kavango West are not some, they are not some water paradise where everyone has tap running day and night. No, that's not the case. And imagine this is fascinating. Or how would I say it? Ironic. You sit next to the, you're actually closer to the river, but you actually have a water, in terms of clean water, problems. The very community being asked to give up their river water are the same community that experiences regular water shortages. Some villages still rely on unsafe water sources. That's ironic. Very, very ironic. So the new Rundu Water treatment plant, which has been coming for years, so which also is being built right now, by the way, at a cost of how much was that money? At the cost of over, at the cost of over $665 million. This is supposed now to fix some of this, supposed to fix some of these irregular water shortages in the, and also drinking of unsafe water in some villages. So, yeah. But locals are worried, okay? So as they are building this new Rundu water treatment plant, locals are worried. So they are worried, and people are worried because sometimes these consultations that are done are more like presentation of something that had been decided on, okay? It's not a consultation that you have your decision stand. No, no, no. It's kind of like, okay, we're just informing you. Just know that when you see tractors and, you know, bulldozers or whatever, or a lion passing in your field, don't worry. We're doing what we want to do. So some of these consultations are just presentations, you know, to say, to inform you. It's not really a consultation. Maybe we need to find a better way of saying consultation. It's not consultation. So the locals are worried. They are worried that this plant is not really for them. Eh? They are worried that this is not for them. They are worried it is just a pumping station. They actually think that this is a pumping station dressed up as a local project, and that most of the water will end up actually in the pipeline to the central regions. That's what they are worried. That, it's called this is a local project, but I think this is actually an idea, that the idea that they have. This is the idea they said. This is a local thing, but I think this is exactly starting to put in place the idea they have. So, and they have evidence for their suspicions. So they have evidence for their suspicions, because here's the thing, okay? This pipeline plan is not new. Okay, it's not something that just now, the consultation wasn't just done now. It has come up before. So the people rejected it, and they rejected it, and now it is back again. So it's back again, but, you know, packaged differently. Here, the whoever, NamWater or government, whatever. Now they, okay, you rejected it. Now we have to repackage it. So they repackage it differently. Push through the cabinet decisions, okay? So let's go to the cabinet decisions and then present it in a public meeting that, you know, feel more like briefing, as I said, than really a consultation. So then we have senior, you know, traditional leaders. We have some from Buza, traditional authority, who put it actually plainly and said, hey, Kavango people still face water shortages. So how can you take water from a place that is already thirsty? So we are thirsty here, and you want to take water from us. So he wants the government actually guarantee that the new treatment plant will first save the Rundu. Not only Rundu, maybe the region and the surrounding communities, and before before a drop go to this side of the red line, you know. So I'm actually on the point of the red line. We also use our red line to say, no water on that side. So we make a conditional, okay? Unless you open our red line, we will not give our water. That would be something. It would make them think. Yeah. So open the red lines, then the water, we will think about it. Not we said, we just said we'll think about it. Okay. So now, and that sounds like what now the traditional leaders are saying, sounds like a basic fairness, you know, but is there anyone in the government that actually can guarantee you that? Eh? Can give you that guarantee? I don't think so, really. So now, let's look at now. This is where now the story get a little bit uglier. The story get a little bit ugly. And I'm not going to sugarcoat it. I'm just going to say as it is. All right? So now the leaders in the Kavango, quite a number of leaders that are there in that meeting, are saying they were not consulted in the early stages. Okay? The Hompas, the Fumu, you know, the traditional authorities. They were not brought to the table. Now, the original councils were not part of the planning. Some community members say the only people consulted were those actually living along the main highway, not the people actually living along the river. So they were consulting the wrong people. They were consulting the people living along the highway rather than the people that living along the river. One regional leader called this institutional arrogance. Okay? So he called it an institutional arrogance. And I think that phrase sticks because what it means is this, you know, a decision was made in Windhoek in a cabinet office, and now the people affected are being told about it after the fact, you know, after the fact under the label of public consultations. So institutional arrogance. So that's exactly what it means. So when did a public consultant become, a presentation? When did listening to the people become a box-ticking exercise? Because that's sometimes what happened. Okay, guys, on our paper, we need to have that indicated that our consultation done, so let's quickly go and do a presentation. Yeah? So if the people of Kavango said no to this idea before, why is it back on the table? Why is it back on the table? There was also a former parliamentarian from the region asking exactly the same question, asking exactly that. She said, the people already refused this proposal. No, they have already refused this proposal. So how come we are here again? How come we are here again? Is this a consultation or is this just informing people about what has already been decided? So that question should make all of us a little bit uncomfortable, because the reason I'm saying this, because today, if it can happen in Kavango, it can happen in your region too. But in this time, you know, for Kavango is water, for your region it will be a green hydrogen, or it will be oil and gas, or it will be, you understand? Yeah. So, as I said, it should also be that we should consider that. All right. Now the other interesting thing, okay? The other, let me give you also this. The other interesting thing is maybe let's talk about numbers. You know how much I love numbers, okay? Because NamWater say the pipeline will only take a small amount of water. Now, they said it will only take about a small amount of water, less than 1.5 of the river minimum, you know, flow at Rundu. Yeah, okay. Okay. Do you know how much actually the water in the river? So now, so they're saying is that, you know, no, no. it will probably will only take a small amount of water, less than 1.5% of the river's minimum flow at Rundu. And only, and they said, well, it's only, and it's going to be only during the wet season. And they say it will not harm the river system or the community that depend on it. So, but there's a problem. Leaders now, the leaders in Kavango do not believe it. They do not believe that. And they are asking for a proof. They're asking for a proof. A constituent councillor from Rundu, from Rundu Rulers, challenged Namwata directly. You know, he said, and I'm paraphrasing, you cannot manage what you cannot measure. Actually, it's a quote unquote. You know, you cannot manage what you cannot measure. He wants a comprehensive scientific audit of the Kavango River. Eh? He wants to know exactly how much water is there, how much the region needs. So, which is actually a good question, which is actually seriously, seriously good question to say, you know, how much water is there, how much the region actually needs now, eh? And how much it will need in 10 years. Eh? So, in memoria to the transition, and how much can realistically be taken without damaging the ecosystem? Hmm? That's a good question. That's a good question, Councillor. That's a good thinking too, Councillor. So, and Namwata, according to the report, according to this article, did not have a clear answer. They didn't have a clear answer. They couldn't show a full audit. Hmm? We are talking about the $7 billion project that will pull millions of cubic meters of water from one of our most important rivers every year. They will do this every year. And there's no comprehensive, publicly available audit on how much water is actually in that river. They haven't gone prepared. Eh? They were not prepared, and they didn't go to the meeting prepared. Hmm? Good question. And the a respected traditional leader from Samju, a traditional authority, pointed out something that gives you, I think some that gives you some chill, if you like. Now she said that before independence, and this is something. Now this is not some. This is someone who's looking at the experience, not on a scientific audit that is being asked. She said, from what they're experiencing now, that she said that before independence, people could not cross the Kavango River on foot. They could not cross the Kavango River on foot. It was too deep, too strong. Some people can literally run across certain, but today, so before independence, you couldn't do that, but today some people can literally run across a certain part of the river. What does that? That's not a scientific. That's what they experience now. That it has become low. The flood plains, the impadi as they call them, the deep lake-like area connected to the river, have disappeared. They have disappeared. So she said some of these water bodies were once so deep that children could drown in them. Now they are gone. Eh? Now they are gone. So when Namwata says the river can handle it, the people living next to it are saying, look at the river. It's already shrinking. Eh? The river is already shrinking. And this is not a scientific, this is just an day-to-day experience of the people. Eh? And they are right to ask, if the river is getting smaller, and we talk about climate change, you know, climate change is making rainfall more unpredictable. Then they ask, what will this pipeline mean for our children? What would it mean for our children? So now, maybe the other angle we can look at is, so they couldn't answer. You know, and this is just a pure experience of it's a pure experience of people who said, okay, First of all, we need to know in 5 years' time, in 10 years' time, you know, as we see already, we see certain floodplains actually disappearing. That's already telling us that slowly by slowly, the water are getting shallower. Now you can actually run across the river in certain parts. So now, and that make me think, who really would benefit? Who would benefit from this? And let's talk about money. And also fairness. It's not just about money, but also fairness. So now I'm going to say this pipeline is for national water security. Well, you can understand that, but sometimes you have to think for how long. If you want to deplete that source. Okay? They're saying this pipeline is for national water security. The head of their business unit for the Northeast said, he said that if we took, so he took greater authority, number that started turning against Bwalish, you know, if we took seat without water, the whole country would struggle. In a sense, it's true, as I said, it does make sense what he say. And he say winter cause, as we said earlier on, the winter cause government, also of universities or key services are in winter. So he said that they are working for the betterment of the whole country. Now, again, that sounds, what is the word? Reasonable. Sound noble. Okay? Maybe that's the word I'm looking for. Sounds noble. But let us be honest about what national interest, okay, those inverted comma, to national interest that really mean in practice here. What does it really mean? The central area already have more infrastructure, more investment, more jobs, more political attention than the Northeast regions. So when you add a $7 billion pipeline, you are not just, you know, you're not just moving water. You are actually cementing a pattern where development happened in the center. That's what you're still cementing. And the region are expected now to supply the raw material, like what we do to, we're using the same system. Whether it's mineral, electricity, or raw, or now water. So, now, one clever suggestion, okay, there was one clever suggestion, and that led me to think in this way. So one clever suggestion came from the same counselor who asked for the audit, the Rundu one, okay? He said, instead of taking, and that's someone thinking, really, all right? That's actually someone thinking. Instead of taking water from Kavango to the industries in central Namibia, why not move some of those industries to Kavango? So because remember I'm saying is that you know you are cementing the whole pattern where development only happened in the center, only happened at this in the central region. So and he say, well, why not, you know, if you're talking about if you're talking about that we need to supply winter because of those industries and what. Okay. Why not actually bring some of those industries here? Why not move them to Kavango? If water is in the north, bring the jobs and the factory to the north. Build up the region. Create employment where the resource is. That's not bad. That's not a bad thinking. That's not a bad thinking at all. And then you take pressure from the north. You take pressure from the central as well. Because now people are rushing to Windhoek for jobs and whatever. Because that's where you're concentrating everything. So, yeah, that was it. Create, you know, move it here. Move it to Kavango. We also, and so that now people can come up to Kavango. But that's not the plan. That's not the plan. The plan is to extract the water and send it south. Okay? Send it south. And that, my friend, is the old story of Namibia. The old story of Namibia. Resources leave the regions. Benefit stays in the center, in the capital. That's the mentality. That's the mindset that we have. Yeah? That's the mindset. Everything, it's about Windhoek. Everything is about Windhoek. So, is there any alternatives? This is where you also you can come in. Is there any alternative? It's a fair question. Yeah? If not the Kavango pipeline, then what? The Windhoek people. If it's not the Kavango pipeline, then what? Desalination? Some leaders now in Kavango are saying, okay, the government should go back to desalination. Yeah, should go back to desalination. Namibia has the technology. I mean, we did it before. So we have the technology. We have the coastline. So we can take the salt out of the water, out of the seawater. Yeah. So yeah, it is expensive. Yes. But, so is $7 billion pipeline. It's expensive, but the same thing as the $7 billion pipeline is always expensive. So a desalination does not actually steal water from a region that already needs it. In this case, the Kavango states also need the water, so it doesn't steal the water from them. So, yeah, that's alternative. What do you think? What is your thought? So others are saying we need to manage demand better. Okay? So Windhoek already reuses a lot of water. Maybe we need stricter water recycling, better fixing of leaks. And that's very important. And especially talking about better fixing of leaks. This is one thing that so much water is wasted because of the leaks. Nobody really paying attention, especially when you have people have their own pipe. You know, there's a common water distribution point and everybody have to pull their own pipe from there. You find a fountain of water here, a fountain of water there, fountain of water. So, and nobody takes much responsibility of that. So we're wasteful. Better fixing of leaks, that should help, and more responsible use by also bigger consumers before we start actually building massive pipelines. So we need somehow also to be, you know, take care of what things that are going on already. We could actually save some waters as well. And then there's the question of population and planning. Okay? So if you listen very well on the article, there's also, you know, a question of population and planning. If Windhoek is growing beyond its water limits, because that's what it is. So Windhoek is actually growing and actually beyond its limit in everything. You know, these are things that you haven't planned. Now we are caught with our pants down and we're thinking, okay, let's go and get water from waste. They waste so much water. You don't even thinking of the future of the Kavango River. You're only thinking, okay, we are in trouble here, and let's get water from there. So we are caught with our pants down, and this is definitely emergency, kind of like an emergency a plan. So Windhoek is growing beyond its water limit. And should we not be asking, is it sustainable for everyone to keep crowding into the capital? So that's why the idea of the councillor is very good. Bring those industry there. Then people, there's no need for them to come to Windhoek because there's job in the regions. Yeah? Should the government not be spreading development more evenly? Tangelo is no katongo. It's no katongo. Development do idike mo, you know, and commerce region. Should the government not spread development more evenly so that people do not all have to move to Windhoek to find jobs and service. He is right when he said the bigger offices, the ministry, everything is in Windhoek. He is right by saying that. Shouldn't be that the government, to decentralize that? So that's the point. The government should actually decentralize development. Well, it's easy for me to sit here and talk about it. Okay. All right. Honestly, it's easy for me to analyze these and throw these questions. Yeah. But, you know, it's not easy. Okay. It's also not easy. I acknowledge that. But they are the questions a responsible country should be asking before spending $7 billion and risking the future of the river. I'm not just asking this, but if we're responsible, these are questions that we should be asking before we spend that much money. Because there are also a likelihood that you are risking the future of the river as well, which you don't have the data and the audit, the scientific audit. So you're most welcome to continue on taking this, but at this point in time, if you want to jump in somewhere and you want to come through, the telephone number, I'm still on planet Mars. My colleague will help you to get to me. I'm enjoying it up here, so that's why I'm not prepared yet to come back. Probably next week I should be down on Earth. So the telephone number, it's a Windhoek number, 083-288-401. 083-288-401. So you could be living in Kavango. And how do you see this? How do you take this? You don't need to be a Kavango to understand what is going on. Especially this issue, national issues. Yeah. Mr. Helmut, maybe I should actually talk to Helmut. Yeah. So Helmut, what do you think? What do you think, Helmut? All right. So let's also look at there are also other groups. When you look in terms of cultural and economic life, like this, because the river is there. There's so much attached to the river. A river for the people that live along the river. The river have a cultural values. You know, Helmut will tell you that. It has a cultural values. It has a, you know, because they are cousin to some crocodile that are cousin to some other people. You know, you know, there are cousins that, there are crocodile that are cousins and brothers to, you know, to some other people. The river has a cultural and economic values. So we have the Kavango People Forum. It's recently formed, and a local NGO. They are planning a peaceful demonstration on the 17th of July to oppose this pipeline. So the spokesperson called the river the lifeline, okay, of the region, which is true. And that is not just it's not just a nice phrase. It's the truth. A river is a lifeline for the people in the Kavangos. So the Kavango River is not just a tap. It's a source of fish, okay? This is where people actually go and fish. It support farming along its banks, you know, our schemes, you know, so also get waters, I think, there. So, and I'm talking from, of course, I'm talking from point of corrections, but I believe so. So yeah, it's also supporting farm along its banks, you know. It sustains wildlife that bring tourism as well. The reasons why we have people goes to those, it's because of the rivers, you know? So It's a part of identity and heritage of the people who are who have lived there for generations. So our traditional leaders said, and they said it directly, you know, this river is our heritage. It must be preserved for our children and children's children. Okay? I'm speaking like biblical now. So, yeah. If you reduce, the whole thing is this now, that if you reduce the flow of that river, you do not just affect drinking water. You affect fish stocks, for example. Okay? You affect the floodplains. You affect agriculture. So you affect the entire local economy. And you break the cultural connection that money cannot actually replace. So there's so much to that. It's not just, hey, give us water and then, oh, there's so much to that. So when NamWater say the impact will be will be small, so the NamWater comes and, man, gosh, don't worry, the impact will be small. And they say, okay, give us the proof. It doesn't have the proof. And the people on the ground are saying, hey, small impact by who? By whose definition? Yours or ours? We are the one who are living here. We know. We are the one who know what is going on here. Eh? You don't even have a proof. Eh? So, yeah. So, yeah, small impact by who? By whose definition? Eh? So, as I said, there's a fight. It's a round one. That's not round one. It's round two. So that's actually round two. Round one happened, and then the Kavango people didn't win because the NamWater came back again with a different package. They said, okay, Kiatuka exercise a little bit. We come a little bit puffed up a little bit, you know, with some muscles, and we bring the cabinet decisions, and we bring, you know, ministers as well. Eh? So that's round two. So let's see what happened again. So, but we have to look at this in a bigger picture, okay? So we have to look at this in a bigger picture. And, yeah. So, and the bigger picture is that here is what troubles me, at least me, as someone who looks at, you know, because that's what we do every day. Someone who looks at the economy, someone who looks at how the country is being run, you know, that we read all this and bring it to you. So this pipeline fight is not really about pipes, okay? That's not it. These are two versions. These are two different versions of Namibia, okay? It's about two different versions of Namibia. Now, one version say the center, we're talking about now, the capital, must be saved at all costs. If you really think this deeply, that's the idea. We need to save Windhoek at all costs, because the capital is the engine of the country. Okay, the version says we should abstract, get the water, take the water out, water from the north, channel it to the south, and keep the capital running. That's one version. It says the region exists to support the center. So you guys exist to support here.
Pukinya mbak kalau dia ke Matiasa terlihat dia ke David terlihat dia ke Maika tanda ni sabmanga. Kita papi dia mama singgil sana simbalanu. Yang mbak kompor kini olah olah mama toka mati kau kapofi. Kuanu. Aye, umaliri. Upai fe o program aku famasha. Hoyo aita mereka pesen beri ini mama ke embalang gajah.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Guys, welcome back. You know that I told you I'm a planet Mars. I think the connection sometimes is not good enough. And you guys are using credit units. So So sometimes those credit unions, maybe they get finished. Maybe I should be the one calling, because here, the technology here at the planet Mars is far, far, far better. All right. All right. Welcome back. Come back. So welcome back. I was talking about the versions. When you're looking at the article itself, as I said, you know, one is that we need to do everything. Okay. We need to do everything to save the capital, to make sure the capital is running. You know, and it's kind of a version that says you guys in the region exist to support the center. Okay? So the other version is saying Namibia is one country. It's one country. Every region deserves a development, not just an extraction, as we see now. You know, it says you cannot ask a community to sacrifice its future so that Windhoek can keep growing. So it says development must be shared, not centralized. You know, you guys in Windhoek, you're probably hating me today, saying, this is helping us to get water here. Eh? So which version do you believe in? Which version do you believe in? Because that is the question underneath this whole debate. That's the question, I think, underneath this whole debate. So, yeah, and let me add this. We our water scarce country, climate change is real. We started to see drought, you know, are getting worse and worse. So the decision we make today, the decision we make today about water will decide what Namibia looks like in 50 years time. So if we build this pipeline now and the river dries up, we cannot pull we cannot put the water back. We cannot reverse the damage. So the stakes are not just about 2027 or 2030. The stakes are about, you know, 2050, 2060. You know, the Agenda 2063, you know, so, and beyond. So that is the danger. That's the stakes. All right. So, and I want you to think, okay, this is not just we're bringing you issues of this. These are issues of concern in our communities. And sometimes I want you to think about some, you know, I normally ask these questions for you to think broader, to think the issue more broader, you know, not just hear them, eh? Don't just hear them. I wanted you to think, and I want you to debate, to debate them wherever you are. Maybe today at lunch, at the lunch and dinner tables. I want you to discuss this at your work, where you are now, on your WhatsApp group. You have a WhatsApp group. Throw that question in, you know, because this is your country, people. This is your country. This is your, this is your water, okay? This is your water. So, yeah, I have a few questions that I want you to, you know, in relation to what we discussed, but I just want always us to, you know, stretch our mind a little bit, okay? So if Windhoek is running out of water, the first question, if Windhoek is running out of water, is it fair to solve that problem by taking water from the region that still has its own shortages? So where is the justice in that? Okay. Well, do you think the question is fair? Because someone will say, no, your question is also not fair. Okay. I think when two people want, you know, they may jump on my back here now. So now seriously, just think about that. Okay. There are so many bigger implications than just, okay, let's get water from the Kavango River. As it has been shown in the discussion by the people that are involved. So now the other question is, should a $7 billion project go ahead? Should it go ahead when the people most affected say they were not properly consulted? And when no full, the other thing is that what we have learned is that there's no full scientific audit of the river that has been presented. Should that go ahead? Because that will show who has the power. you know, at the beginning, I said, this is about power. So should that go ahead? When the people who are affected are saying, we are not properly consulted, and there are no proof, there are no scientific audit, you know, of the river. So that's another thing to think about. And thirdly, if the Kavango River is already shrinking, what we have seen also is that it's actually shrinking. And people who have lived there for many years, for decades, say it is. They say it is. They give us an example. And so why are we assuming it can handle a massive new pipeline? So people are telling us that we can see the changes now. Things that, you know, so why are we assuming, which is, I'm just using the word assuming because there are no data, scientific audit. So why are we assuming that it can handle massive new pipeline? I just want us to think. Think in those lines, you know, and think in the line why, how the people are actually seeing the whole project. You know, why are we, the other question is, why are we so quick to build a pipeline to move the water south, to move the water to the center, but so slow to build industries? Because that's the question. He said, okay, come build the industry. This is where the resources is. But we are quick to say, let's spend $7 billion to do this, but we are actually slow to build industries, jobs, and real development in that region, in the north. So we need answers. So, and if this pipeline goes ahead and the river suffer, let's just assume and the river suffer, who will be held responsible? Maybe those one will be, actually the one who made the decision will be gone already. And they would be buried already. So is it NamWater, the ministry, the cabinet, or will the people of Kavango be told to just, well, live with it? Or be just told, man, live with it, man. I'll let you answer those questions for yourself, okay? But I want you also to come through now. Come through. Let us discuss. Let's discuss. But here's what I know, okay? Here's what I know. So the government that does not listen, the government that does not listen to its people before taking their water is not the government that respects its people, all right? And a country that cannibalizes one region to save another is not building a future. So it's just delaying a disaster. Honestly, just delaying a disaster. So the Kavango People's Forum is marching on the 17th of July. They are saying no. And whether you agree with them or not, they deserve to be heard. Yes. And not as a formality, not as a checkbox, you know, but as a matter of right. So it's a matter of right. It's a matter of their right. All right. So, you come through. What do you think? What's your take? I throw a couple of questions just for you to think. Telephone number is 083-288-401. All right. So, yeah. Can we have a commercial quickly? A quick commercial, please.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel
anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right. Welcome back. Make sure that you download the Eagle FM app. And you see, I'm at Planet Mars, and I can still actually listening to Eagle FM even when I'm here. So it doesn't matter where you are. When you have the app, you could be anywhere in the universe, and you are able to listen to your favorite radio station. So, yeah, make sure that you download the Eagle FM app, and you can do that through Google Play and Play Store, you know. So, all right. Welcome back. So we're looking at the leaders and the residents of Kavango rejecting the whole plan, Kavango Link, the idea actually is to extract water from the Kavango River all the way and pump it all the way to the central part of the country. So, and they're saying, first of all, we were not consulted. Last time we were asked, we say no, and where does this coming from again? Yeah, so, and they kind of feel that, you know, there's something fishy. You know, this is just a, you know, and they stand there. Their position, and the Kavango People's Forum is marching, it's planning a march on the 7th of July, on 17th of July. So, yeah. So that's what's happening. That's a tension that we see. So that's in the boxing ring of, in the Kavango. So the first round was the Kavango were knocked down. They got up. They were not counted down. So they got up. So yeah, they are trying again. So let's see what happens. Okay, and we followed that story. And we unpack it for you, just to have a better understanding of what is going on. So I know you went to people wouldn't want to say anything because this is actually in your favor. We shouldn't be like that, man. We shouldn't be like that because it's my favor. I keep quiet. Eh? If it's an injustice, we should speak about injustice anywhere, wherever it's happening. All right. So, all right. Telephone number is 083-288-401. All right. So, okay, let's move. We gotta move. Our time is about 15 minutes past the hour of 9. And, we have plenty of time. So we can go slowly. So we have plenty of time. We go until 11 o'clock. So, yeah, but we also want to bring you information that are happening right now in the land and around and in the land of the brave. All right. So good morning. Welcome. Good morning, Namibia. So if you're just joining us, you are tuned in to Unpacking the Day right here on Eagle FM. And I'm your host, Big Mike Osovedi. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for joining me. All right. So the story we we're unpacking in this segment, it tells you a whole lot about where our priority sometimes really lies, where our priority really are as a country. And it affects more people than sometimes we think. Yeah. Last week, the top bosses, you know, the top bosses at the Ministry of Sport, Youth and Sport, Youth and National Services, you know, that is the executive director, Mr. Gerard Fries, announced that the government is freezing, is not freezing from the cold, the winter cold, is freezing fund to national sports federations. Freezing fund to national sports federations. It's not freezing from the cold, it's freezing fund. So that means the money that usually goes to help our athletes to train, you know, to compete and represent this country at international events, that tap has been turned off. It just has been turned off. Not reduced, not that it has been reduced. It has been turned off. Not delayed, okay? It's frozen. Using the language that is appropriate where we are now. It's winter. It's actually frozen. You can now feel what that means, okay? Yeah, so it has been frozen. Now, here's what makes this really interesting, okay? This is what makes this story interesting. You see, and honestly, a little painful, given where we are in this country. So our president, you know, Her Excellency, Madam Netumbo Nandaitu, has been saying over and over that sport is not just a game. She has been saying this, that sport is not just a game. She called it a tool for building up our young people. It's a tool for building up our young people, for growing the economy. She's been saying that, for bringing Namibians together, you know, and for putting our flag on the world map. That's what the president has been saying. And it's part of, you know, those priorities. Or is it part of an enabler? No, it's part of the priority. Now, strong words, really powerful words from the president, the kind of words that make you sit up and think, aha, yep, we are finally taking sports seriously. You understand? So where you can, you know, where you now see, okay, someone is taking sports seriously. Yeah? But then comes this funding freeze. How do you reconcile that? Then suddenly you have to ask yourself, how do you build a house when someone keeping taking away the bricks? You're trying to build a house here, you know, and someone is keeping, someone keeps taking away the bricks. How do you finish the house? The president says sports matters. The government says sport is priority. But when it is the time now to open the wallet, when it's the time now to open the wallet, the story changes. The story changes. And that's a contradiction we need to unpack, I think. It's a contradiction that we need to unpack this morning. So to unpack that with you. All right. So how do you reconcile that? How do you reconcile that? So yeah. Now, and maybe the question is what this actually means for the athletes. What does it mean? Now, we have one, according to when you look at the story, I think they say story in the new era. Now, one of the people pushing back on this is a young Namibian swimmer who has been to the Olympics, not once, but twice. Okay, who has been at the Olympics twice. His name is Philip Seidler. Okay? And and he's speaking up, not just for himself, but for every athlete in this country who is trying to compete at the highest level. Okay? And what he's saying is very simple. He's saying that you cannot cut the money and expect the result to stay the same. So that means if you cut the money, so don't expect that, you know, you will actually receive better result or the same result as you used to. Okay, think about it this way. So imagine you are a farmer, okay? Let me see if I get this one. Okay, you are a farmer. You plant maize every season. You water it. You fertilize it. You tent it. You tent it, you know, to tent it. It's a tent. Yeah, you tent it. The 1 year, then 1 year, someone tells you, sorry, man, no water this year. No fertilizer either. So, yeah, the fertilizer as well. No fertilizer either. But we still expect the same harvest. So would that work? Would that work? That's exactly what we are doing to our athletes. That's what we are doing to our athletes. And sometimes they are doing so much then, given the resources they are getting. We are telling them to go out there and beat the world. Go out there, beat the world, but we are not giving them the tools to do it. So we are not giving them the tools to do it. But we are asking them, go out. Eh? So go out and beat the world. So, and Seidler is not asking for luxury here. He's not asking for fancy hotels or big budget for celebrations. Eh? No, he's talking about the basics. He's just talking about the basics. What are the basics? Proper coach, get it. Pay for the coach, you know, a place to train, the right equipment, because people need equipment. You also need medical help when you get injured. Just the basic things. Eh? So, and this is the big one, okay? This is the very big one. And the chance, you know, when you go and compete on international level, you need chances to travel and compete internationally before the big event. And this is what the reasons why our people don't really get much of the chance, or winning chance, if you can put it that way, is because we are not open. We are not exposed to international competition, smaller international competitions where you compete with others before the main event comes. So because here's the thing, most people really don't realize. You do not just show up at the Olympics and perform. And in many cases, that's how we run short of competitive edge, if you can put it that way, you know. So first you have to spend years traveling to smaller competitions, testing yourself against the best, yeah? Learning what it takes. That's what you do first. And that costs money. That's the cost money. That costs money. And when that money disappears, Namibia athletes simply cannot qualify. Yeah? We cannot simply qualify. It is that straightforward, my dear. It's that straightforward. So in this case, you remember the two things that I always said? You know, numbers don't lie, and follow the money. Yeah? Follow the money. Where does it actually go? Yeah? Where does the money go? Now, Sedler, I think, raised the point. He raised a point that I think every Namibian should pay attention to. He said that too often the money, and this is the point, and it's very important. So he said that too often the money is in sport does not actually go where you think it goes. So it goes to branding. Okay, there's nothing wrong with that, but you know, so it goes to branding. It goes to image. It goes to offices, to administrators, to conferences, to report that nobody reads. It doesn't go to the athletes. So I have listed quite a number of them: branding, image, you know, offices, administrators, conferences, you know, printed glossy reports. Eh? So meanwhile, the athlete, the person actually doing the work, sweating in the pool or on the track, or is left actually scrambling for the basics. So now, this is also, it reminds me something. It reminds me something I was talking about. I was arguing with somebody, not arguing, it's just like having a bit of conversation. It was also on the road, not on the air. And I was saying, this is actually, it reminds me the issue of veterans. Okay. Was actually asking when the veteran was a ministry, Ministry of Veterans Affairs or something like that, you know. Now it's still part of the Ministry of Defense, I think. It's squashed in there. The thing is this, man. That section should be just a directorate. Now, and hear me out. So it should be just a directorate. A directorate would have only about maybe a few or four people that are working in that directorate. The money that is earmarked now for the veterans, it goes directly to the veteran. Now, when you have a ministry, this is where now you have offices. Now you're paying a lot of people that are sitting in the offices. That sometimes have nothing to do with the veterans. Eh? People in the system, those who are in the offices, the administrators, those who go to certain conferences, and even those who go into the conferences of maybe that has, might not even the veteran themselves, or might not even, you know, someone who's going to the conferences of sport might never have, didn't even have done any sport in their life. Yeah? So the money now, it gets lost within all these offices, administrators, and conferences, rather than goes to the people that actually, to their owners. We could have actually sorted out the issue of veterans. I don't know why I'm bringing it here, but I'm just saying, you know, the way we create system that become a problem in the way how we deliver services. You understand? We're cutting money because maybe there's no money. But, you know, because of the bureaucracy that we have created. So, it's the same here. The athlete, the person actually doing the work, sweating in whatever field they are left actually with them.
This winter, Washambamo is turning your shopping into winning. Spend 200 Namibian dollars or more at any shop in Washambamo and you could win a 500 Namibian dollars shopping voucher every Friday. The more you shop, the more chances you have to win. Don't miss out. Visit Washambamo in Ondawa from 3rd to 31st July 2026. Shop, enter your till slip with your name and number into the competition box located in the mall, and stand a chance to win a shopping voucher from Washambamo. Don't miss our lucky winner live draw on Eagle FM every Friday from 1500 hours.
No matter where you are, if you have a mobile device, you can tune into Namibia's number one talk radio station by downloading the Eagle FM app on the Google Play Store or on the Apple App Store. Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
All right, welcome back. And don't miss out on that. Don't miss out on that Washamba Mall. Visit Washamba Mall here in Ondangwa. You have a chance to win something. Especially at this time when, you know, when money doesn't come easy. So make sure that you, you know, visit Washambamo. Maybe It's your day. Could be your day. Don't miss out. All right. So, we're talking about the money being freezed, sport money being freezed to the federations. So, do come through. Our telephone number. Telephone number is 083-288-401. 083-288-401. Yeah, so, yeah, even to the previous stories that we covered already. Yes, so to be very clear, I'm not saying sport administrators are, I remember what I was saying earlier on, I'm not saying sport administrators are stealing money. All right. No, but I'm saying we need to ask, you know, some hard questions, I think, you know, how much of every dollar meant for sport actually reaches the athlete. I think that's the point, you know, how much of every dollar that meant for sport actually reach the athlete. That's actually my point that I'm making. How much, you know, get eaten up by the system, as I'm giving example of the veterans. So how much actually get eaten up by system before it get to the person who needs it? And we created this unnecessary, hurdles, you know, that shouldn't be there. As I said, we should have actually sorted out the issue of veterans, you know, if it was just a directorate and a directorate can organize how, because the money, you have only about three or four people that are working in the directorate and the money goes directly to the people who need it, which is meant to. Now you have probably hundreds of people within that ministry and the budget, you know, it's eaten up by the system. And what do they get? They just get scrapped, you know, what is left over. If the ministry freezes the funds, is it because there is no, is it because there is truly no money? Or is it because the money is not being used well in the first place? So what is going on? Okay, these are the questions that deserve answers. We need answers. They deserve answers now. Okay, we want answers. We want, you know, maybe we need to go to demonstrate, you know, say we want answers. So, but we need to know, because this is people's life. This is people's livelihood. Okay, and we need answers now, not next year, not after another Olympic cycle passes by. You know, we need it now. So, yeah, the other things maybe we can look at in terms of this study is looking at why our business are not involved in Namibian sport. There are a few companies that are, but largely involved, like as we see in other countries. So one solution being pushed is getting the private sectors move, you know, more involved. So, and that's one thing that is being pushed. The idea is that if government cannot carry the full load, if the government cannot carry the full load, then Namibian business should step up. Namibian, you know, business should step up. So tax break, maybe you can use tax break or a better visibility for the company, long-term partnership or something like that. So that gives company a reason to invest in sport. I think maybe we also don't provide a better opportunity for the business. That could be the case. So, yeah, because when you think about it, you know, it sounds great on a paper, but in some way, and as I said, it makes sense. Why should government only, why should government alone carry the weight when there are successful companies in this country that could benefit from being, you know, associated with living, with a winning Namibian, you know, athletes, because they are, you know, first of all, the business, the only way to, in Namibia, for example, the only way to be successful, to want actually to be associated with, you know, so they don't want to, you know, build you from the ground. Yeah. They only wait until you're successful. So there's also some kind of, criticism there. So this is what I want to push back actually on a little bit on this. The private sector, we have to understand, or business, people, they are not a charity. The private sector is not a charity. Business invests where they see a return. You know, you invest where you see a return. If you don't see a return in sport, you know, and right now, Namibian sport does not always sell, it doesn't always sell itself well. We don't sell ourselves well. Sport, it doesn't sell itself well. So we have incredible talent. It's not that we don't have talent. We have incredible talent in Namibia. Talk about boxing, talking about, you know, what is it? The Gladiator just won the COSAFA. Can you imagine that? Almost South Africa. So rugby, we normally qualify for the World Cup. Cricket as well. You know, we excel. We are so talented in many sports. So you remember the, and you see where it happens. You remember now when we talk about, I remember asking, you know, when they talking about, okay, we're going to create, you know, all the sport field, in every constituency. You are expanding yourself thin with the little money that you have. You understand? So, you know, in one go, how is that possible? In one go, in one budget. We could have actually, you know, stadium really of the world art, you know, best art. This is not the word I want to say. Well done, you know, even if you have only one in Kavango, one in each region, with all that money that goes to constituency, first of all, build maybe the best, you know, stadium in each region, which can be used, you know, we can be able to say, hey, we don't mind, even the World Cup can come here. Even the World Cup can come here. You know, stadium that can be multi-purpose kind of stadium where when you have music, that you go there. When you have music or competition, music event, you go there. When you have whatever, so that's the problem. Yeah, what I wanted to say just that, you know, the private sector, I think they are not charity. They only invest where they see the return. And as we speak right now, sport, it doesn't always sell itself better in Namibia. So we need to improve. Okay. We need to improve the talent we have. And we have powerful stories. We have powerful stories to tell, especially when it comes to sport. So the question is, do we have the structure in place to make a business feel confident that their money will be used properly? Do we have structures? That's the question. Maybe that's the missing piece. Structures that give business confidence that their money will be used properly. So I just don't want to put my money in something that, you know, I don't even know who is actually in charge, how you're going to use the money. You're not giving confidence to the business. And I think maybe that's a missing pasta. That's a missing piece. And before maybe we ask business to open their wallet, we first need to show them that the sports system in Namibia is professional. We need to show them that it's professional, it's transparent, it's worth trusting with your investment. We need to show that. We cannot just cry out, the business are not coming along, the business are not investing, while our house is in disarray. And here's another thought. When we say the private sector must help, are we not admitting that the government has failed to do its part? Are we not saying that the national budget, which belongs now to the people of Namibia, including the athletes, has not been managed in a way that protects sport? That's what we are admitting to. And in admitting to that, we kind of now tend to the private to the private sectors, seeing that, hey, you are not managing the money of the public well, so why would we invest our private money? Why? So because if we are now turning to the business to do what the government promised to do, then something has gone wrong somewhere along the line. Something has gone wrong somewhere along the line. So, and this is, I don't know. I really don't know. Okay. So what do you think? 083-288-401. All right. So do come through and have your opinion, have your say as well, your contribution. Now, looking at this, maybe we need to look at who loses actually in this. Of course, I mean the current athletes, but think of in terms of the future, because this is not just about the current athletes. The Olympians, the national team players, they have some experience, some name recognition, maybe even some personal saving to fall back now or to fall back on. But what about the 15-year-old in particular who just discovered she can run? Yeah? Think about that person. What about the boy in Oshakati, who has been swimming in a community pool and dreaming representing Namibia? What about him? What about to that boy? So, and those are the ones who will be hit. Those are the ones who will be really hit hard or hit hardest by this funding freeze. It's a talent being, because you don't see the future. Not today, but in five or 10 years, when we look around and wonder why we have no new champions, why we have no new champions coming through, is exactly because of this. So we have to understand that the higher performance sport is not built a year. You don't build this professional sport in a year. It's a pipeline, It's a pipeline. You start with the young people. You develop them. You support them through tough years, and these are the tough years now. You support them, and these are the tough years, and eventually they reach the top. That's how, as I said, it's a pipeline. It's not just boom. It doesn't happen that way. And it looks like we haven't really planned. There's no plan. We're making decision at an ad hoc level or kind of approach. So if you cut now the funding, it's like this: you're cutting the funding at the bottom of the pipeline that I'm talking about. You are cutting the funding at the bottom of that pipeline. So you do not just lose a few athletes, you lose an entire generation of potential. Okay? You lose an entire generation of potential, and that is the cost, and that will cost this country. That's a cost that we cannot afford. It's a cost that we cannot afford as a country. All right? So, yeah, and maybe it's a time that we really start hold accountable those responsible accountable. Time for straight answers, all right? So where does this leave us as a country? Because here now, think of this: we have a president who's saying sport matters. The president say pushing that the sport matters, and we have the ministry that has frozen the money. Yeah? And we have athletes who are now worried about their futures. So, and we have a general public that mostly does not know this even happening. You probably didn't even know that this is happening. Yeah? So, and that's not good. That's not good enough. That's not good enough. Not for the country that wants to be taken seriously on the international stage. If we want to be taken seriously on the international stage, that definitely not, it's not enough. Okay, here's what it needs to happen. All right? This is what needs to happen. Well, these are not my own thoughts, but also when you're looking at what the situation happening now. So the Ministry of Sport need to come out and explain exactly what this freeze was necessary. Was it necessary? Why this freeze was necessary? Not a short press statement that we see. A real detailed explanation. How much money are we talking about? Where was it going before? And what is the plan going forward? We need to know what's the plan going forward, because right now athletes are being told to keep training, and keep believing. Yeah. Those mumbo jumbo without money. Yeah. But nobody's telling them how they will afford to do that. So we need to know. We gotta know. All right? So the second thing that needs to be done is we need a proper national sport. I think this is very important. We need a proper national sport funding model. I haven't seen one, seriously. I haven't seen one. One that does not just rely on government alone. Okay? So we need to come up with the one that it doesn't just rely on the government, but brings in business, federation, and athletic themselves, the athletes themselves as well, to share their responsibility. We need a funding model, sports funding model. And that model needs to be It needs to be transparent, okay? Every cent must be tracked every cent, and every decision must be explained. Because trust is built through openness. You know that. So trust is built through openness, not through, and sometimes not just through, you get this press release and you have no way of answering questions, some of the questions that we have here. Yeah. So what needs to be done also, thirdly, is athletes need a seat at the table. So they need a seat at the table, not just a voice in the media, a real seat where decision about, where decision about their career are being made. They need a seat on the table. So the people who actually live the challenges of Namibian sport every day, they should be the ones helping to find solutions, isn't it? Yeah? Not just the people sitting in offices. We need the people that are living this experience. Okay? All right. So, yeah, look, Namibia is not a, it's not a rich country. What do we say? Ah, no, maybe I'm contradicting. So to say it's not a rich country. Because we do say, hey, Namibia, we are rich. Eh? So, but I think we are not. I mean, even internationally, we are not one of the, we are not one of the rich country in the world. So there are, because we have many competing needs. Yeah. If you look at where we are, we have so many competing needs. We have health, we have education, we have housing, we have roads, you know, every dollar, every dollar the government spends is a choice. It's definitely a choice. So yeah, we are not that rich, but well, could be debated depending on how you look at Namibia. So, but if this government truly believes that sport is a tool for youth development, for national pride, for economic growth, and the president has said exactly that, then those words must be backed by action. It must be backed by actions. Yeah? It must be backed by action. You cannot on one hand call the sport a national priority and on the other hand freeze the very funding that keeps it alive. How does that mean? Help me make that sense. Help me to make sense of that. At some point, the gap between what we say and what we do becomes the story itself. It honestly becomes the story itself. So this morning, I want you to think. Yeah? I really want you to think this. So I want you to think about this. If we cannot even fund the athletes who carry our flags around the world, then what does that say about us as a nation? Eh? What does that say as a nation? Huh? So are we as serious about sport or are we just serious about talking about sport? And that's the difference. Maybe we are serious about, we are really serious about talking about sport, not really serious about sport. Which one is it? All right. This is Unpacking the Day right here on Eagle FM. And if you have thought on this, please do come through and get, let's get this conversation going. So the telephone number is 083-288-401. Yeah, because any decision really, any decision would affect all of us. Doesn't matter whether you are an athlete, whether you are a parent, a business owner, or just someone who believes Namibia can do better, it will definitely affect every one of us. All right. 083-288-401. Okay. So yeah, let's also go for a quick commercial. We go for a quick one. Let's go for a quick one as well. And then we come back and we look at, so we're going to get into the issues, from the last week from Parliament. Especially from the 1st of July, that there were a lot from the 1st of July sitting. There were a lot of issues that were being discussed there. When we come back, we're going to look at that. So let's go quickly to the quick commercial, and we'll be back in a second. All right. Welcome back. Some technical error there. I said I'm in the planet Mars, and this alien sometimes, you know, they get involved in our transmissions. All right. So welcome back. As promised, okay. It's still early in the morning. Grab a cup of tea, a cup of coffee, whatever you drink, get comfortable and let's have a little conversation. Now last week, last week, I think Parliament was really buzzing last week. I love following them. Not with shouting, but with the big debates. There were some really, really big debates, tough questions that coming from some of the MPs, some uncomfortable truth as well, you know. And if you think it was just another ordinary day in the National Assembly, I think you will need to think again. Now, our leaders were talking about, they were talking about laws that some say were rushed through too quickly. Young people demanding to be heard. So those are some of the things. Workers who feel they are not getting the fair deal, and also the ongoing question of land that many believe is still in the wrong hands. So those are some of the things. These are not just political argument. These are things that affect your pocket. Okay? These are issues that affect your pocket, your family, and your future. So sometimes it's good to listen to the Parliament debate, to give you a picture of what is going on, of what is going on in the country, and also the laws that are being entertained in the Parliament, and the issues that the focus of the discussion in the National House. So, yeah, so what exactly happened? Okay, what exactly happened? What does it all mean for you? Why do I have to bring this up? Okay, let's unpack together. Few issues, one at a time. Yeah. Now, I'm not going to mention who actually brought up that emotions or whatever. I'm just going to to focus on issues. Let's start with a big question. Let's start with the big question that came up in a parliament, you know, who is really writing Namibia's law? Okay, so some member of parliament argued that, you remember those, you know, the 13 new law covering banking, finance, and money laundering, that actually when we get actually the grey listing kind of issues that we did all what we needed to do actually to get off from the grey listing. So now some of the MPs are asking, you know, are saying we pushed through too quickly because of the pressure from outside Namibia.
Download the Eagle FM app to tune into live Eagle FM programming or to listen to podcasts of previous broadcasts. Eagle FM, Namibia's number one talk radio station.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, eh? And I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Simon, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional and church events, and basically any event that you wish to broadcast on a national level. Call them now and talk to Monica at 081-270-3727 or the office number 083-288-400. Eagle FM, the eye.
All right, welcome back. As I said, we're looking at issues. We were listed on the grey list, and where there were some requirements, there were certain things that we needed to do to get off that list. Yeah, so some of the Member of Parliament argue now that those 13 laws, new laws, covering actually banking, finance, and money laundering, were pushed through too quickly because of the pressure from outside Namibia. So, and if that is true, it raises an important question. Are our elected leaders making decisions that are best for Namibia? That's now the questions being put on, being asked, or are they simply following instruction from the international organization? So that's the argument to say we look like we are being pushed because of the pressure from outside, and we're not actually making laws that are best for the country, but for international organizations. So the message from those MPs was very clear that Parliament should go back. The Parliament should go back, review those laws, review those laws carefully, and make sure they work for ordinary Namibians. Okay? After all, the law that satisfies an international standard may still actually make a life harder for let's just say, for a grandma in Ongwediva or anywhere in Ohangwena or somewhere, trying to open, let's say, for example, who's trying to open up a saving account. So the law is it's good for the international organizations, but it doesn't help someone who actually trying to open up a saving account in Caribbean or somewhere. You understand? So a law can satisfy the international standard, but it may still make life harder for your own people, and in most cases that's the case. So that's why they said, okay, no. We may have a law that actually satisfy the international standard, but it doesn't help our people. So we need to go back, review those laws carefully, so that it must work for Namibian nations, for Namibian people. So, yeah, that's one thing. That's one thing that came out that I felt that It's something generally looking at that, because sometimes when you think about it, it does make sense in the way that we can be pressured by international organization, whether it comes now, think of in terms of whether it comes to, let's say, for example, you can take even the meat that we supply outside. Okay. So there are requirements. China has a requirement. The requirement of the meat that we need to transport, that we need to export, you know. The EU have a requirement. The US have a requirement. So it end up that what we do is to satisfy the international bodies. Eh? And in the process, it may not actually, we may not, what, and I'm, this is just one example. It could be other things as well. Eh? So I think it does make sense there. The reason why I noticed that is, okay, that really makes sense. We may create laws that fit in an international arena, but it really doesn't work. It doesn't satisfy our people. You understand? There's a risk there. Eh? And sometimes when you want to fit into the global arena, You focus more, your law now focus on the international arena rather than on your people, eh? And we find ourselves suffering, and the policy first of all find it difficult implementing the policy. The policy might not even fit into our situation. Okay, so that's the point that they are making, which is very, very, very crucial. Okay, it's very crucial. Another issue that sparked debate was Namibia's membership of the International Criminal Court, the ICC. So that also came up. Some MP questioned whether Namibia should remain a member, arguing that the court appears to focus mainly on African leaders while powerful countries often escape the same level of scrutiny. And we are seeing that on the international level. So bigger countries, powerful countries are doing things that just go unpunished. But in African leaders, you know, they are on their heels. Eh? And they are now on their heels. So the members are saying, what are we doing anyway with ICC? Eh? So whether you agree now or disagree, it is a question worth asking, actually. You know, what benefit does Namibia get from being a member? Does that membership still serve our national interest? Being a member of ICC, does it serve our national interest? And that goes also with what we said earlier on, you know, to say that do we just conform to international requirements even when it doesn't serve our national interest? So, yes, that's also was something that actually sparked some debate in the parliament last week. So something that worth discussing, something worth discussing. So, yeah, what do you think? Well, what do you think on some of these issues? Yeah. And there was also the... Just a few things. Also, there was also a strong call for the Namibia to establish a truth and reconciliation commission. Now, the idea is that although the country gained independence, many families are still waiting for answers about loved ones who disappeared or suffered, who suffered actually human rights abuses during the liberation struggle and afterwards. So, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission. So the supporter of this believes that they believe that such a commission would help uncover the truth, promote healing, and strengthen national unity. From me, I look at what happened in South Africa. I wouldn't say that it went really well. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa went well. It didn't. So we had people killed because of that. We have a number of some people who were killed because of that. Would you say because they went through that process that they are better off in terms of reconciliation now? Do you think that they are better off than compared to Namibia? Not really. From my point of view, really, looking at Truth and Reconciliation, that the process that went in South Africa, it didn't do better. It didn't really achieve something concrete, or maybe that what they wanted to achieve. So do you think they are United Nations? I'm not now talking about the United Nations, but do you think they are united? South Africans are more united because of a Truth and Reconciliation Commission? Has it done its work? The push of this, it's worrying. I'm not too sure whether that's a direction. Well, you can argue against that. There are those who are worried also. It could reopen old wounds. Yeah, and how do you handle that? As I said, it hasn't properly handled in South Africa where this has applied. So the real question is this, okay, can a country truly, maybe this is the right question to ask, can a country move forward if parts of its history remain unresolved? Maybe that's a proper question to ask. Can a country move forward if part of its history remains unresolved? It's a big thing. I think it's a big thing. And it could be something that keep always dragging us. It's one thing you can ignore it and said, well, it didn't go well in South Africa. Not completely, but you also can't go on without resolving your history. It will always haunt you. That part will always haunt you. it's going to keep coming up over and over, you know? So, yeah, maybe. I really don't have an answer. I don't think many people have an answer to that, you know? Yeah, so, but what do you think? What do you think? It's something very serious, really. We shouldn't just brush it and think, yeah, it's insignificant. Because it's going to keep coming up. It's going to keep coming up. Yeah, and especially when the issue of reparation, the genocides as well, as long as those things are entertained and not properly handled, you will always have this at the back, you know, of your history. And if it's unresolved, definitely that's becomes, it's not going to go away. Don't think just, because we don't talk about it at certain point, it's gone away. No, it's remained. Yeah. Something that you need to think about, spoken in the parliament. Some people think that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission is something that need to be done. Personally, I really don't know. I really don't know. Yeah. So do we have a way of handling that in a proper way that it doesn't, you know, it doesn't create, because there are ones that you really are going to, you know, to reopen. You're going to reopen old wounds, and you have to have people that are skilled in a way to, that we don't do the same thing as in South Africa. I just think that it wasn't really proper, in my opinion. You could have a different opinion on that, in terms of that. All right. So Parliament also heard concern about its own credibility. It was funny, actually. About its own credibility, some MPs claim that certain individuals have been presenting themselves to international organizations using titles they are not entitled to use. That's also came up. And if those claims are true, so they raise the question about accountability and trust. And after all, if a parliament expert, parliament expect transparency from others, it must also hold itself to the same standard. It should hold itself to the same standard. So, yeah. So that was something that came up, as well, on credibility. Yeah. There was also some positive things as well. You know, several MPs called for the Anti-Corruption Commission, to become stronger. And more independent. That's also something that has been spoken. They argue that appointment to its leadership should be open, should be transparent, and based on merit. I think that's something that get consensus. Many of the MPs were really in agreement. So the message was very simple here, that if Namibia is serious about fighting corruption, the institution responsible for doing so must be trusted by the public. And that make a hell of a sense. It must be trusted by the public. Otherwise, well, it's a waste of, first, it's a waste of resources. And if the person is not credible, there would always be questions, why this is not happening, why these people are not being, you know, investigated. Why, if it's a ruling party, people involved, so there's no agency or something like that. There's always be, what is that? There's always that, that kind of thinking from the public as well. So what do you want? You want that people believe in the commission, and they trust the people given the responsibility, And if every one of us believe in the leadership, the idea is now to have it open. The leadership should be open, transparent, and it should be based on some kind of merit. All right? Not just because you are, you know, you are a member of the think tank or of certain group of elites. Who will protect that group of elites? So those are the things that that the public want to see, and also some members, several MPs, are called for the anti-corruption to become, that it should become stronger and it should become more independent, because there's a lot of corruptions that are going on. All right, what is your point? What do you think? What is your
Mr. Mike?
Yeah.
The issue from my own psychological school of thought.
Which issue?
You cannot set up justice.
Yeah.
When your mentality is not towards justice.
You're talking about the Truth and Reconciliation Commission?
Yes, both with the so-called International Criminal Court of Justice.
Okay.
I'm saying so-called because the International Criminal Court of Justice only tried leaders that are deemed to be criminal by NATO and Western organizations.
Yeah.
When Western organizations are responsible for if you get 100 years ago, millions of people were killed because by Western, organizations in the name of colonialization and conquering lands and so forth.
Yeah.
But the International Court of Justice did not investigate that and bring Britain, for example, to book for subjugating countries that are under the so-called Commonwealth. France was not brought to book for subjugating countries under the so-called Francophone, countries. Now we are talking about the opium, situation of China.
Yeah.
That was done by the British. No one was brought to justice about that.
Yeah.
So how does it become an International Criminal Court of Justice?
So it sounds like it's more African Criminal Court of Justice.
No, it's an African targeted.
Yeah.
It's an African targeted, an African Latin Americans and so forth, targeting. They now wanted to come out and, wanting to bring Netanyahu there, but they can't.
So, but do you agree now, with some members that are questioning, what benefit does Namibia actually get from this, from being a member? Because it seems that being a member still doesn't serve our Namibian interest.
You know, Namibia made a political statement. Political decision. It was not made based on any morality. Namibia just wanted to be politically correct.
Yeah.
And to be viewed as a growing democracy on an international, stage. It was needed that time. Because, we needed that for some reasons. Yeah, but we are grown up now. We need to get out of that organization because it is not serving any purpose at all. People that are having organizations that are funded by international donors would say, we need to be part of that. But from a Namibian point of view, Namibia doesn't benefit from any International Court of Criminal Court of Justice, because it is not a justice court. Just look at what NATO has done in the former Yugoslavia. Up to now, people are still suffering from the impact of the use of the depleted uranium ammunition that were used in Kosovo at that time. So, and no one, not even the so-called International Atomic Energy Agency, had made a formal complaint or investigation against NATO.
Yeah.
You know, of the, you can't use depleted uranium in a civilian, populated area. So, and the Americans got away with a nuclear bomb that they used on Japan. So they got away with that. And the Americans got away with 5 million deaths in Iraq and over 2 million deaths in Syria and over 1.5 million deaths in Libya and over 800,000 deaths in Somalia and over 2 million deaths in Afghanistan. And now we are talking about over 3,000 deaths in Iran. And we are talking about over 70 to 80,000 deaths in Gaza because they are supplying Israel with the GBU, these bunker buster bombs that Israel is using to bomb, Gaza to oblivion.
So all that
are counts of, those all those are cases that the International Court of Justice needs to investigate. They are not doing that, and they are compelling countries of Africa to be part of such a court. Under what merit? Somebody must tell me the type of baptism that African leaders have gone under.
Yeah. So there was something you talked about. I can't remember now the phrase you were making earlier when you started, and I think it has something to do with truth and reconciliation.
When I said you cannot maintain justice when your mentality is not towards justice.
So can you expand that? Was it now in terms of ICC or is also truth and reconciliation?
Okay, let me just give you a practical example. You know, when you get paid on the 20th, you have a certain standard of what you want to eat for that whole week.
Yeah.
And after the 27th, you are gone back to normal because you don't have capacity to maintain that high standard that you create on the 20th. That's just a euphoria. Yeah. Because you just gotten paid.
Yeah.
Now, if you are to come up with a truth and reconciliation, commission, that is, in my view, it can work. But the standard for it to work is very high. Because number one, everyone will force government to come up with a truth and reconciliation commission because we want SWAPO exposed, for example. We want SWAPO to be exposed. We want the former South African government to be exposed. We want the Germans to be exposed.
But
that's a high level of looking at it. If we are honest with ourselves, we need to start from the ground. You can never climb a tree from the branches. So you need to start from the first stair, and the first stair is your own family. Do you have some truth and reconciliation in your own family? Because your family has committed atrocities. So we start there, so that you, from your family, in your family circles, you have committed stuff. You have done stuff that you have gotten away with. Your grandparents have gotten away with whatever they have done to others. So now, if we cannot do that, then we must forget about the commission from a government level, because a government person is a family person. That's it. The family is a first stair. The same thing with fighting corruption. That's why we will continue to be corrupt. Because corruption starts from the family.
Yeah.
We have been trained to be corrupt without our parents knowing. Now, if you have a child, your uncle's, your brother's child that is staying in your house.
Yeah.
And you call your own son behind somewhere in a certain room and you tell him to eat secretly and then wipe his mouth and wipe it clean and there must not be a trace that the person has eaten.
Yeah.
You are training a person that is going to be a pastor tomorrow or a principal. That person is going to be a minister.
So the corruption idea has been the seed has been actually planted while you are a child.
Exactly. So what you see now when medicine is disappearing from the government medical store, it's a full grown tree that we are dealing with because the thing has been crafted from the family level.
Yeah.
So you cannot.
I understand what you're saying, but do we look at that way? Do we look at that in that way anyway? And now thinking of how do we get rid of corruptions? So do we looking in terms that this is something that actually within individual, how they were brought up, you know, not only how they were brought up, but how the society functioned largely. And how do we then get rid of that if we don't look at what you are saying now?
Yeah, because we are designed to look at others.
Yeah.
And we neglect looking at ourselves. You see, that's why even if you come up with a prayer day, you pray at B1, which B1 is responsible for much of the, car accidents in the Republic.
Yeah.
Even if you pray, God will not answer that prayer. Not because God is powerless, but because there is a law that God cannot violate. And that is a law of free will.
Mm.
That if you have the capacity, the ability to look into the engine of the car, you open your bonnet and you check the engine to check whether there is enough engine oil, whether there is enough water.
Yeah.
Don't you do that? All of you that have cars, you do that all the time.
Yes.
But there is something that you don't check before you get into the car. You don't check your own medulla oblongata. Whether or not you are prepared to or adhere to road regulations.
Yeah.
Before you get behind the steering wheel. So, the issue is not the road accident.
Yeah.
It comes with a mentality. Because Namibia has the most, good roads. But the accidents are high. Because until we deal with a mentality, with an issue of free will, when you can freely decide not to adhere to road safety regulations, we will pray and will pray amiss. Because the issue is not outside. It is inside ourselves. So what is called for is don't call for a prayer day.
Yeah.
Call for the transformation and the renewing of everyone's mind.
Yeah. So you are in some way you are agreeing with the president where he said that it's not the amount of money that you pour into anti-corruption commission. It's the attitudes of people.
Exactly. Look. I knew how to steal meat in the pot as a blind person. And I was never caught up to now. And even if I say it now, my mother will disagree that that thing never happened. But it happened.
Yeah.
So, because I know everyone's...
You always know where the pot is anyway, even if you're blind.
No, look, I don't need to know where the pot is. I can steal meat from the pot while the pot is cooking.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
But there used to be some, conditions on the ground first. The ground must be. So I knew everyone's perfume, everyone's footstep, and I could hear from a distance. And I know that by the time they reach this point, I'm gone. So, and you now...
Given also that you are blind, you are more likely not to be the suspect as
exactly.
well, isn't it?
You are the last person to be said to be suspected. Well, you are the main culprit. In fact, you are the main suspect. You are not even a suspect. But society, in our cultures, there are certain mentalities that we have embedded in people who have become ministers today, and people that have become CEOs, and so forth. When you eat in Oshwambo way, when you eat milk, you know how you eat milk?
Yeah.
You are eating with an elder.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you are eating with an elder, he's telling you how to eat. Not because the way you are eating is wrong. He's telling you how to eat so that you don't reach the surface. Because at the surface there, he has kept pap. And he's the only one that should reach that surface. So that is already a corrupt mentality that is being instilled in a child. And this person is growing up. Tomorrow is going to be a CEO of a company or a manager in a company. And before you know, millions will start disappearing. Because it's a mentality that we are coming with from our family closets. And family, if family has to be investigated, the corruption that is even in the family is even bigger, massive than what the government is doing. I think the government will need classes on how to be corrupt, because family is the most corrupt entity. But the only problem is that it cannot be investigated, because that's a private unit.
So I think it's an interesting point that you're making, because we don't think about corruption in terms of that it's a mentality, and which is actually the president has mentioned that as well. But it's a mentality, and if we want then to deal with the corruption, so then we need to look at how we then deconstruct our mind, you know, and how we see corruption in this regard.
Because look. A human being, in as much as he pretends to be whatever, a human being is 100% hypocrisy producing machine. Because a human being's hypocrisy is such that something is wrong when it is done by A. But when I'm doing it, I have a reason for doing it. So if we are to come up with a truth and reconciliation, we shouldn't look at the government. Let's first start it from the first stair, because the government is the last stair. Because the person who is at the top in government, he is here, he's coming here, he's coming from here at the bottom in family. So the mentality, this first need to change at the family level, at the household level. We need to have our mind, our mentality transformed and renewed. Then, with that renewal, we can function better in the office. Because this person only spends few hours in the office. And the many hours that he spent at home, nobody cares about what he does.
That's what I wanted to kind of like, how do we change the home, because the dynamic at home has completely changed. You know, it's looking at where we are now. Many women and men are not in the home, and they come late in the home. And what you are saying that we need to instill in people, It's really the structure in which we are now become a bit different, and maybe we need to look at how do we do it that differently.
No, when things change, definitions also change.
Yeah.
If you are not at home, which means that is no longer a home, it is a house. So it does not mean you are not at home, you are just not in the house.
Yeah.
But whatever you call home, is your own private closet set, where you spend most time with yourself. That is where we need to start with.
Yeah.
Because the office is just a manifestation of the hidden character of people.
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. The office is just a platform to manifest your hidden character, whether you are a good steward or not. The office just exposes that. So, but for you to become a good steward is because you were taught at home that if somebody leaves a Coke in the fridge, you don't touch it until the owner comes.
Yeah.
And if anything comes here, we share. When I call you to come and eat, you call your brother, you call whoever. You don't sit and eat alone. Somebody who is like that is going to be a minister tomorrow. And this minister will be different because he's going to fight against mismanagement of resources because this person was brought up as such. So even if you look at ministers now, you look at government officials, they are just manifesting the fruit. Because when you are dealing with a tree that is already bearing fruit, the process of cutting it down is more difficult than dealing with a tree or a tree that is still young.
It doesn't bear anything at all.
Yes, you prune it, the process is easier. So now we are trying to deal with full-grown trees, and we are using a wrong method. Because we don't understand that what we are in the office is just the manifestation of who we are at home.
Yeah. No, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. That's why you find, you know, people that are all the time on sick leave. They are not in the office. They don't sit. Because this person, even at home, is lazy. He cannot wash his own clothes. How do you expect this person to be productive at the office where he just spent 8 hours?
Yeah.
So if we graduate it higher, we look at if we want a true reconciliation, we need to look at it from let us apologize to families for what our grandparents have done to them. It starts there. Then we can demand SWAPO and the Germans and whoever to be accountable of their own problems.
All right. Now, thanks for coming through, man. So let me just round up with other things also that comes out of the parliament as well.
All right. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you for coming through. Yeah. All right. So we continue, and thank you, Tate France, for coming through. And as I said, some of the things we're mentioning here, or we're talking here in your area, and you can do the same, man. You can do the same. If you are listening, you can do the same. I've been calling you to come through and have your say as well on some of the issues or things that are bringing to you. Telephone number 083-288-401. 083-288-401. We still have a couple of minutes before we bring the show to an end. Yeah. Other things that come out of the parliament, issues that were discussed. The parliament also discussed the country's readiness for emergency and environment disasters also came up. With recent, there were recent fires, you remember in Etosha, recent droughts, other climate related changes that we see. So the MPs questioned whether Namibia is properly prepared to respond when disaster strikes. And their concern is that better planning, strong institution, and quicker responses are needed actually to protect lives and livelihood. And as we see, you know, drought or flood do happen frequently, and we always don't seem to be prepared. Yes, and I think that discussion needs to be had. We need to have that discussion of country readiness for emergency and also the environmental disasters. Are we prepared? Do we have approach or plan or measure in place to address issues or planning or institution that can address issues of emergency when they strike, when they happen, emergency and disasters when they happen? Yeah, it has been discussed, and I think it's something that need to be discussed in more length and come up with with some kind of a plan, a better plan, and I think a strong mechanisms that can quick respond to protect, as we said, to protect lives and livelihood in many cases. All right, that also came up. The other things, there was also, now let's talk about education, because this was another major issue in Parliament last week. One, and it's interesting one, the one proposal that received a very strong support is the introducing civil education. Yeah, civil education in schools. In simple terms, this means that teaching learners about the Constitution, not just about the Constitution, but how the government works. It's also teaching them what are their rights, you know, your rights as a Namibian citizen, and their responsibility. It's not just about the right, but it's also their responsibility as citizens. So many MPs believe this would help, you know, especially young people, understand how their country is run, and also encouraging them to take part in democracy, because many of them are really aloof to the issues, to the political issues, you know. And frankly, many people would say this is actually long overdue. I would say this is something long overdue. Too many learners leave schools with certificate, but very little understanding on how decisions actually are made, how decisions that affect their lives are actually made. So I think I would say it's something long overdue, and it should be something integrated in our curriculum as well. Another issue pertaining to school that sparked also concern is the grade 11 and grade 12 promotion policy. It was also raised. Some MPs argues that the rules are confusing and not always applied consistently. Yeah, so they say hardworking learners are becoming frustrated because they are not always sure what is expected of them and why some learners progress while others don't. You know, it's more confusing. And if students cannot trust the system, how can we expect them to stay motivated? You know, so yeah, that also, I think there is a lot of confusion of how this is actually happening. So people, even from the teachers as well, there are some teachers who still don't know how the system works, and the student as well. So it may cause, you know, the whole people not being motivated. Okay. Teachers and student alike. Yeah. So, and the discussion also turned to the Namibia Training Authority, apprenticeship. Can you believe me? My tongue, it just doesn't want to roll enough. I think apprenticeship. You know, program. You know, the program is designed to give young people practical skill by, you know, where you are combining classroom learning with the with workplace experience. So the NTA, so now the concern, however, is that too few companies are offering apprenticeship, you know, opportunities. It's very few companies that are providing that, that are offering that. So as a result, then young people finish their training with certificate, but without enough practical experience to do the job confidently. So that has become a concern. And of course, qualifications are important. Qualification is important, but a real hands-on experience is just as important as well. And that's the idea, actually, that when these young people finish their training, well, of course, they have a certificate, but they also they have a bit of experience behind their back. All right, so that has come through as well. And then came a statistic that should, I think that should make us all maybe really, you know, stop and think. So more than 70% of Namibian population is under the age of 35. And this is a young country, with enormous potential, as we always say. Yet many of the key decisions are still being made without enough young people at the table. That has changed a little bit in the parliament. So we have so many young people, maybe too many young people. So the message from parliament was clear. Young people should not only be heard when they protest or something like that, or post. They should also not just be heard when they post on social medias. They should also be part of the meeting where policies are made and decisions are taken. So now we have so many young people in the parliament where the policies are made. So let's see what you can offer. Yeah? You have given that opportunity. So there are many young people in the parliament. It's actually a youthful parliament. So, and what are you delivering? Yeah? Are you delivering? After all, if we are, they say that if we are planning the future, you know, the future of young people without including young people, we may be planning a future that does not actually work for them. So at least in some areas, as I said, in the parliament, we have really, yeah, we have youth parliamentarian there now. So let's see what you can do. Don't just complain. Show your wealth. So we said you are the future of tomorrow. Now you are. You're already in your future leaders. You're already in a leadership position. So, yeah, let's see what you can do. So, yeah, if we go to money, if we talk about economy a little bit, there were also things comes up. Let's talk about money. Because, well, the economy was another big topic in parliament. The first issue was poverty. Okay, several MPs say poverty should no longer be treated as just another statistic in the government report. So they argued that Namibia has been measuring poverty for decades, you know, but many families are still actually struggling every day. So their message was very clear, was very simple. Instead of short-term handouts, government should focus on helping people actually to build a lasting livelihood. Okay, so that means supporting families to farm, you know, start small businesses, you know, find jobs, you know, become financially independent. Given where we are at this point in time, that we have to find a way. Let's find a way to really deal with this. As they said, it should be emergency. This should be emergency. And the one thing is also looking at this is that we are very maybe some of us, I mean, I'm old enough to see this in, it's not just giving it to people who are economic or something like that. You know, it's something that you experience on day to day. Really given, look at the economy of, I'm just talking the economy of Joburg and Pretoria. That's a provincial economy. How big it is. It's bigger than Namibia's economy, you know. And imagine how many people are living in those metropolitan cities. Yeah? And you look at, we 3 million, as big as this country and the economy that we have, in terms of maximizing what we have to the extent of addressing the issues that we want to address. I'm just looking at the 3 million people. Eh? 3 million people. As the president said, we are too few to be poor. Honestly. Eh? We are few. We are too few to be poor. Think of Soweto. Just the Soweto of Johannesburg. I'm not talking about ours here. It's about 6 million people living in that. So that means if you take Namibia, we will fit in twice in that. So imagine if we had a large population of people. Maybe God is very clever. You know, he said, you guys, the way you are, you know, if you were a large population, you would die. Absolutely, you would die of hunger if you look at the poverty in this country. And how we drag ourselves into that is not something that we can say, oh, it's just we wake up and we live in poverty. We drag ourselves into that, eh? In the way how we manage our resources. So I think that as citizens, the reason why we sometimes bring in these things up here, we is to create awareness, you know, is to raise that, you know, your mind, to raise your consciousness, you know, to wake up a little bit and say, this shouldn't happen. And let's do something about it. The only way we can get out of it is really doing something. Okay? And be a little bit selfish. Eh? Be a little bit selfish about this. I want what is best for me. And you are not providing it. Eh? I want what, if every each one of us are saying we want what is best for us, wherever in the community you are, that's the only way you can push it. If we all say in that community, we want what is best for us, let's be a little bit selfish. Eh? We want what is best for us. And you, the person who will put you there thinking you'll bring us what we want, you are not. Get rid of him. Get rid of her. Get rid of whatever system that it doesn't bring, you know, a better livelihood. Okay, that actually drag us slowly by slowly into really poverty, to beyond measures. All right. Another important discussion was about financial inclusion. In many rural areas, community people still find it difficult to access banking services. Some do not have enough income or asset actually to qualify for loans or things like that, while others live far from nearest bank. You know, I was in Okalongo, and there were only two, there were things that I'm doing that part or some on that part. And there are only two ATM, one Standard Bank, one actually FNB. And believe me, people come there and spend the whole day in the queue. And sometimes actually money gets finished and they still sit there waiting that somebody will come and put money in. And sometimes it doesn't happen. And the person has been just sitting there waiting. You know, I needed money quickly. So I wanted to go there. And when I went there, oh my goodness, the queue. I thought it was actually a pension day or something. Eh? And it was just like people actually queuing for the ATM. And it's a long queue. So this is the financial inclusion that we're talking about. So the result is that many people are locked out of the formal financial system. Eh? If you cannot easily save money or get a loan or access other financial services, it becomes much harder, you know, to improve your life or grow a business. Yeah? So, yes, there are a number of issues that we, it's almost time, but, yeah, there are issue of fixed-term employment contract that were also discussed there, issue of truck drivers also discussed there, sport levies, you know, yeah, and land. That's one thing I wanted to go to, but no, we need to end up here. Yeah, just to bring you some issues that were discussed, we need to end up here, and then I will hand over to my colleague in Windhoek to take over. Yeah, so hopefully soon I will be coming off from this planet. I will be coming from, I'm intending to come back. Yeah, from planet Earth. So let me wish you a very good day, and don't do what I wouldn't do. We wouldn't know what I wouldn't do. But anyway, anything that let's do what things that that build this country, that put us, you know, in a position where life and the dignity of Namibian people is respected. So from me, Michael Chavelli, I wish you a very, very, very pleasant day ahead, and continue listening to Eagle FM and other programs that are coming your way from now on. So from me, Mike, all the best until tomorrow. Bye for now.